Peter introduces himself at the outset as Simon or Simeon Peter. Most manuscripts record the latter name, and it is striking that Peter chooses to introduce himself in this manner. Cross-reference 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 1. Simon is a Greek translation of Peter's given name, but Simeon is a transliteration closer to the original Hebrew spelling. This form of Peter's name is used only one other time in the New Testament, in James's summary statement at the Council of Jerusalem. Simeon related how God first concerned himself about taking from among the Gentiles a people for his name. Acts chapter 15, verse 14. By introducing himself in this manner, Peter may be giving a clue that the concerns of the epistle were of particular import to the Jewish Christians to whom he is writing, or that he is dealing with Judaizing issues raised at the council. In both Acts chapter 15, verse 14, and 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 1, the Hebraic form of the name is linked with an allusion to the Gentile world, for Peter is a name of Greek origin, and Simeon's report in Acts 15 is about the extension of God's favor to the Gentiles. Right from the outset, Peter identifies himself in a way that gestures toward the issues that dominated first-century debate among Christians and between Jews and Christians, and also gives us, his readers, a clue regarding the letter's background issues. Peter also introduces himself with two titles, bondservant and apostle. While servant might be seen as a way of highlighting the author's humility, in many of its biblical uses it is a title of honor. Moses was the servant of the Lord, as was Abraham, Jacob, and the coming Messiah. In the New Covenant, the word is used with reference to the entire church, and it describes the absolute commitment required of the disciple. As servants of God, Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 1, the apostles are entrusted with the secret things of God. Most interesting for our purposes is the use of this word in connection with the prophets. Prophets were the Lord's servants who brought the word of the Lord to his people, and in particular brought the covenant lawsuit that condemned Israel for her unfaithfulness. Peter is doing the same. The Greek word for apostle has its roots in the Hebrew office of shaliach, the office of a specially commissioned representative who acted with the full authority of the one who commissioned him. The accent of the word is on the authority of the messenger, not merely on the fact that he acts as a messenger. New Testament usage of apostle carries on this note of authority. Thus we find in Matthew chapter 10, verses 1 and 2, that the designation of the 12 changes from disciple to apostle when they are granted authority to go on a mission. Interestingly, though the word shaliach was not used by rabbinic Judaism to refer to the prophets, it is used of the prophet Ahijah in 1 Kings chapter 14, verse 6. Apostles go beyond prophets, since they bear the revelation of the last days given through the Son, and since they act with the full capacity of the Lord. Still, prophets and apostles are similar in various respects. In particular, like the prophets, the apostles prepare the way for the Lord's coming by presenting the covenant lawsuit against the people of God and warning them that they have broken covenant and stand in the way of God's wrath. This has an important bearing on our interpretation of 2 Peter. Throughout the epistle, and indeed throughout the New Testament, there is a concern with an imminent coming of the Lord. As I noted in chapter 1, I believe these prophecies refer to the coming destruction of the temple in AD 70, which marked the end of the old creation and brought in a new creation. Given Peter's evident concern for this future event displayed in both his letters, it is no accident that Peter introduces himself to his readers with a phrase that connotes, among other things, an authoritative and prophetic office. Like the prophets, Peter warns of future events in order to stir people up to repentance and to urge the saints to continue in the way of holiness. He moves on from the introduction, therefore, to outline what Christian living looks like. Two issues here are relevant for our purposes: Hellenism and eschatology.